Ladies and gentlemen, can I introduce the host for this workshop session, Dr. Kevin Murphitt.
Thanks, John, and good morning, everybody. Listening live here and also on the stream and Vision Australia Radio. This session, Ultimate Independence, combining innovative technology with your cane or dog guide. In this session, I'll do a short introduction, and then we've got three fantastic speakers here, John Ross Barresi, Katie Butler, and Penny Stevenson. They'll speak for about 10 minutes each, and then we've got 15 or so minutes for comments and questions, and then I'll say a little bit more about Dog Guide Handlers Australia at the end and close the session. All right, so off we go. In the era of ever-improving technologies, people who are blind or vision impaired have many more opportunities to increase their mobility and independence. Combine this technology...
Can you turn your audio off, please?
Combine this technology with our dog guides or canes, and we have the most advanced and effective mechanisms to be involved in our communities. This session will showcase innovative technology and provide opportunities for discussion about how technology can improve mobility skills overall. Okay, so now we'll move to our speakers and I'll introduce them each in turn, and then they'll speak for around 10 minutes. There's a lot of audio-visual material to interest you as well. Okay. So John Ross Barresi is Innovations and Project Coordinator with Guide Dogs Victoria. After graduating from La Trobe University in 2001 as an Orientation and Mobility Specialist, John Ross worked at Vision Australia, providing O&M training for those who are blind and vision impaired. In 2004, he moved to Guide Dogs Victoria, where he is currently employed. John Ross had an early interest in adaptive technology and how it can assist people who are blind or have low vision to increase their independent mobility. In his current role as Innovations Project Coordinator and Specialist O&M Coordinator, he manages projects that design and implement new technologies to provide greater independence for all clients. Over to you, John Ross.
Thank you very much for that introduction. Thank you, everyone, and thank you for having me here. So what I'm going to do today is talk about a lot more about the Blind Square projects that we've been working on. Alistair mentioned yesterday, for those that heard his talk, we're doing a lot of work in this area, and it's pretty much become my full-time role at the moment. I'll start off with a short video that we produced for a lot of our grant companies when we apply for a grant, and I think it describes the technology pretty well before I go into it a bit more. John, when you're ready.
Imagine if you were blind or had low vision. While navigating the streets of Melbourne has been vastly improved in recent times, there is still a challenge of navigating and understanding the surroundings once you've arrived at a destination. This is where localised beacons can bring a whole new world to those with a vision impairment.
It is shopping mall entrance, southwest. To pass a seat, four doors. Doors on the left are automated. A second set of doors after the vestibule.
The information broadcast to the user can be updated from day to day. For instance, informing the user of special events in the area, recent changes to the layout, and the location of vital facilities. For public events and attractions, it can bring huge value by adding the missing information required to navigate and safely enjoy a day out. Beacons can also be used to increase public safety by informing the user of temporary installations or work sites in the area. The technology is currently being tested at Southern Cross Station.
We needed to test it in an environment that would actually demonstrate it is effective. Being a station with a number of people travelling through from rural and regional areas, we thought it was an ideal location.
Actually makes it possible to come to a place like this by yourself. And now all of a sudden you've got access to bits of information that most of the rest of the community can take for granted.
So coming to work, the beacons would make a huge difference to me because they would be able to keep me up to date with the changes in the environment. It could be that because of the beacons, I would actually be providing the people that I'm with information instead of them providing it to me, which would be a real change and something that could actually be considered empowering, which would be really great.
Guide Dogs Victoria plans to implement the full beacon project at the District Docklands, Zoos Victoria, Parks Victoria and the Albert Park Precinct over the next 2 years.
Thank you, John. So a little bit more about the technology and what it is. So we're using the existing GPS app BlindSquare, which a lot of you may have heard about and already use. Beacons, as we already mentioned, for internal spaces and QR codes as well as a form of information to assist with mobility. And another big part component is our customised location service. So customised location services that we're using in outdoor spaces, so we can effectively map areas that are not on a standard map that you will find on Google Maps or Apple Maps. So a little bit more about the beacons themselves. For those that aren't aware, they are a small wireless Bluetooth device. They emit a Bluetooth signal. So they're stuck up all over the place, and they're strategically coded depending on where they're put. Each beacon can carry up to 8 different messages, so the user will get a different message depending on their direction of travel. So how it all works is that I upload information onto a Google spreadsheet, and as I said, beacons are placed in locations where wayfinding cues are required. So as an O&M, I'll go through a space and think, if I was standing there with a client, what do they need to know where they're going? And that's the sort of information I'll put on a beacon. So BlindSquare recognises that a beacon is in your vicinity and reads out the message corresponding with that unique beacon ID. So why this technology is important, we found that obviously they are really only means of internal navigation now, and for a while have been the tactile ground surface indicators. And the only problem with those is that if you haven't had training on those before, you don't know where they're leading you anyway. So obviously GPS doesn't work inside, so that's not a viable solution indoors. Tactile signage and braille signage is fantastic if you can find it in the first place and get to it. And we hope it will make built public spaces and events and experiences more accessible. What we love about using the BlindSquare solution is that because it's an outdoor GPS app, as soon as it comes indoors, it starts recognising beacons and that sort of thing. So the user can use the app for all their means of travel. So as in the video I mentioned, we've got a few live sites going at the moment. That has really increased in the last couple of years. So I'll run through the list of the sites that we've got currently going. So we've got the Statewide Vision Resource Centre in Melbourne, our campus at AMQ, Southern Cross Station has been going for about a year and a half now. We've got 2 state secondary schools fitted, Melbourne Zoo, District Docklands, or the old Harbour Town Shopping Centre as it was called. We've just recently done the International Flower and Garden Show, the Albert Park Formula One Grand Prix, and this weekend I'm doing the Ability Fest music festival from the Dylan Alcott Foundation. In sites that are ready to go, but just haven't launched yet, are all the Melbourne City Loop train stations, which also include Richmond and Footscray Station. And we're in early discussions with the City of Melbourne to do Bourke Street and Swanston Street. So the whole street from Southern Cross Station all the way up to Parliament House, and from Flinders Street all the way down to La Trobe Street. I'll just play another video now, John, when you're ready. I'll talk you through this one because the audio isn't 100% on it. So here we've got a guide dog client at the Guide Dogs Victoria office working through and using the beacons. Mobility services. Is there any audio there, John? Yeah. Is it very low? Okay, we'll stop the video and I'll just talk through it. So the way the... Kitchen second opening on left, followed by female and just hear it there. Dog mobility services on right. So what David was doing here, as you walk through an internal space, you're holding your phone flat out in front of you, and the beacons register what direction you're facing because it's using the phone's internal compass. We strategically put the beacons in certain spots, so at each junction. So if you've got a long corridor and there's nothing you really need to know about along there, we won't have to worry about putting a beacon there. So we'll only put it in spots where there's a decision to be made or there's an information that is required. So as David walked through the office, he would approach a beacon, it will chime on his phone to let him know the message is about to be read out, and he'll get information depending on which way he's facing. Doing a virtual look around, all he has to do is turn his phone 90 degrees either way, and you'll get a different message depending on what the phone is then facing. So, for instance, you would get staff kitchen, second door on the left, followed by male and female toilets. If he had been there before and that's all the information he needs to know, that's fine. If he wanted more information, he can shake his phone and then get a different layer of information for someone that needs that extra bit of information as they go. Southern Cross Station was our first major public site, and we evaluated that for people that had gone through because we wanted to make sure it was a viable solution before we started going out and approaching other sites. So I'll just run you through some of the results we received. Have we gone for time, Kev?
You're right, a couple of minutes.
Excellent. So these are, we've just got a few questions here that we asked as part of our survey. So everyone that registered to test the technology at Southern Cross was given this survey to fill out. And one of the first question was, before you attended Southern Cross Station, how familiar were you with the location? So we wanted to gauge people's familiarity with it to make sure other beacons working or they're using their prior knowledge of the station. So 25% were very familiar, 58% were somewhat familiar, and 17% were not at all familiar. Another question was, if you only travel to the station accompanied, knowing the technology is there, will you feel confident enough to travel independently next time? Yes were 58%, undecided were 42%, and nobody said no. And we thought that's a big indication that this technology, when installed correctly, is going to be a big help for a lot of our clients. The biggest one was how likely are you to use the technology again? Again, 42% were very likely, 50% likely, and 8% were unlikely. So these are the figures that we took to PTV when they expressed something, or Public Transport Victoria, for those unaware, and they expressed the interest, and that's what started the ball rolling to be able to tackle the other stations. Originally, they wanted to roll it out across the whole 210 stations on their network, and we said, let's hang back a little bit. Let's do the major ones. So they're all ready to go. All the beacons have been fitted. We've gone through, I think we've used about 110 beacons across the seven stations. And they're ready to go, all coded. We're just about to do a media launch with PTV. And then when that does happen, I'll flick the switch and turn them all on and people can use it. As I said, we're using Blind Square, but for all our sites, we're using what's called Blind Square Event. So for those that are Blind Square users or want to be Blind Square users but can't afford the $60 fee, Blind Square Event is a free version of the app that you can download from the App Store. And we'll enable you to use all the technology and Blind Square in an event zone that we create around each site. And you can use a free of charge while you're in that zone. So what Blind Square kindly done is created an event that encompasses pretty much all of Melbourne CBD. So that covers Melbourne Zoo, District Docklands, all the train stations that are in it. So anyone can download the free version, use it while they're in the Melbourne CBD, and have full use of the technology from there. And that's it for me.
Thank you very much, DR. So hold your questions until after the other speakers, if you don't mind. Rightio. So to Katie Butler. Katie's a community development worker and strategic planner, trainer and researcher, particularly doing her PhD. Her day-to-day work encompasses a range of activities from developing and delivering training content, facilitating connections with business and community, and conducting research and evaluation. Her work involves a great deal of public transport use and travel to unfamiliar destinations. Katie has found that as well as her community engagement specialist and training assistant, Sadie the guide dog, the use of iPhone-based technology has become an essential component of the success in her regular adventures around the community. Thanks, Katie.
Thanks, Kevin. So, as Kevin said, my chosen mobility aid is my trusty guide dog. And with her by my side, plus... Sorry, my iPhone just died. That's pretty ironic, isn't it? Okay. So most of the time, you know, when I'm using my guide dog, I'm also using a combination of iPhone apps. And with my guide dog and that technology, most of the time I feel like I get to enjoy a pretty ultimate state of independence, unrivaled pretty much. So today I'm going to just talk really, really quickly about a couple of different apps I use, and then we're going to put a demonstration on of one such combination of technology. So in terms of what I use every day, TripView to use public transport, and then on my unfamiliar bus routes I often use MoveIt, which tells me when I need to get off the bus, which is fabulous and it's really reliable. I also use Apple Maps to get to unfamiliar destinations. And in combination with that, I might use Soundscape to tell me more detailed information about intersections and crossroads and destinations nearby. And I might also use Seeing AI to read tiny bits of printed information on buildings and signs and things. But the biggest app that has revolutionised my life is, of course, Aira. And I have always been a pretty brave traveller. I'm pretty keen to test my boundaries and challenge myself, and I have a very stubborn desire to be independent. And Aira gives me that extra security to do that because it's like my safety net. I always know that if I get into strife, it's there. So that's what this demo will be of today, me using Aira to get to an unfamiliar destination. I hadn't gotten to Newcastle Beach before from this particular angle, so it's completely new to me. And on this day, I was using my iPhone camera to connect to Aira, wireless headphones, AirPods, and of course my guide dog. So we'll let that demo run.
Thanks for calling Aira. Katie, this is Rachel. What would you like to do today?
Hi, Rachel. I've just gotten off the tram, the Newcastle Beach stop, and I've crossed over the road. And now I'm hoping you could give me directions, please, to the nearest beach.
Absolutely. So from my map, I see that you're at the corner of Scott Street and Pacific Street. Perfect. Let me go ahead and look at the nearest beach to you. So I see that it looks like Newcastle is going to be the closest beach near the kiosk Newcastle Beach, and it'll be very close to the Shortland Esplanade. So let me pull up some walking directions. Did you want to walk or take a ride share? What's your preference?
I'll be walking today.
Okay, beautiful. So it looks like it's only 5 minutes away from you, nice and close. So what I'm going to have you do is it looks, do you mind rotating your camera from right to left? I just want to get the bearing to the clear side of this.
In case you couldn't hear that, I'm just scanning the phone left to right.
Perfect. So what I'm actually going to have you do is head to your left, the direction your camera was just facing.
On left. That should go.
Perfect. Continue forward for a while. You've got quite a ways to walk, with plenty of space. Looks like you're passing some residential areas on your left. There will be a few driveways. The road is to your right. The pavement is, the path is a little uneven, just to be aware that you may find some cracks or some hard to walk.
Okay, great.
So you're coming up to the intersection of Scott Street and Telford Street. That is two lanes on either side, it's a four-way intersection. What I'm going to have you do is cross to your right when you reach the intersection. Okay, so it looks like you're approaching it. If you don't mind pausing right as you approach the intersection, but you're perfect. So it looks like there's a blended curve here on all sides. Turn your camera to the right. So I don't see a crosswalk here. What I'm actually going to have you do, since there isn't a crosswalk, if you don't mind going back the way you just came, that would be the safer route, unless you're
okay. Perfect. No, it looks a little busy.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
It's okay. Together.
I do click at her like a horse.
Plenty of room to go. I'll let you know as soon as you get close to the crosswalk. You're just going to cross over Scott Street to the other side. Some uneven pigment coming up.
Okay.
We should be approaching that crosswalk shortly. Perfect. I'm going to turn your camera slightly to the left. Okay, beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, crosswalk is about half a meter. And blended curve. There is a button immediately to your right about chest high. Perfect.
Got it. Thank you.
And I'll wait silent as you cross.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, I wasn't crossing yet. It's okay.
It's a blast straight across. Good girl.
Lovely. Thank you so much. You can continue forward. Much more even pavement here. There is some opposing foot traffic, just to be aware. Perfect. Looks like you're passing the tram station or the tram stop.
Wait, that's going last. Help!
Perfect. All right, and in about, I think, sights up to the left, about perfect. And in about 2 meters or so, you're going to take a sharp right. I'll let you know when you approach the path.
Okay.
All right, approaching in about a meter, go and take that sharp right.
Good girl.
Beautiful. Cool. You're taking a nice scenic walk through a park. It's called Pacific Park. So in about 2 meters, I'm going to have you pause, and you're going to take a sharp left.
Hello.
Perfect.
Good job.
Beautiful. Nice and sunny out here. There is another dog coming up in about 2 meters to your left, and some opposing foot traffic. Perfect. Pass the dog.
Good job. Hey, dog.
Perfect. Just go ahead and continue forward. You're going to stay on this path for a while. It's a little nice brick path. Beautiful. And you're going to take a slight right.
Yeah.
Perfect. Some uneven pavement now. You're off the brick path. Perfect. Passing a trash bin if you need one at any point. Some parked bicycles to your right. Also looks like a large parking lot. You're going to be reapproaching a brick path in about 2 meters. You'll feel a change in terrain. Perfect, back on that break and continue forward.
Oh, I can smell the beach.
Nice and close. Great, right, looks like some apartment buildings coming up in the corners on your right. Perfect. Continue forward. You're going to veer, let's see, slightly to your left. Perfect. And there's actually a pathway that goes under the street. You're going to be crossing under in about 2 meters. You'll feel a slight difference in terrain, and you'll also hear the difference from opposing traffic, but it's perfect. Perfect. Beautiful. Right, it's going to be a slight left. Coming up, you'll feel a grate under your feet. Perfect. Slight left. Beautiful. All right, some benches and another trash can coming up. It looks like a little bit of a shop coming up as well. And looks like you're at the entrance to the beach coming up in about 2 meters. You're going to walk through a small hallway with some uneven pavement. Lots of people here, just to be aware, there may also be some animals. And you are officially at the Shepherd Esplanade. So there are some areas to lean against some poles if you just want to chill out, have a drink. There is, I think they sell some like ice cream and beach items in the kiosk behind you, slightly to your left. There's plenty of places to sit. If you wanted to continue to the actual beach, you can go forward about a meter and then take a sharp left.
I think we'll do that.
Perfect.
Yeah. That's it.
All right, sharp left. And then in about 3 meters, you're going to take a sharp right. You'll feel the terrain change from ground to sand pretty quickly.
Oh, wait. Little step there, good girl.
Perfect.
That's it.
And I believe there's some steps immediately to your left.
Side front left. Find the steps.
All right. Good. Steps. Looks like there are about 6 or 7 steps down. They're quite wide. Okay. They are a little rusty. There are no railings.
Good. Whoa, they're big steps. Good girl. Good girl. Okay. Good girl.
You will start feeling the sand under your feet. Three, two, one.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Rachel.
Of course, and the beach is about maybe 10 meters up ahead of you.
Perfect. I think we can find the water. All right. Well, thank you for that today.
Of course. Is there anything else you'd like to do today?
That's it. Thank you.
You have a wonderful time at the beach. Have a great day.
Thanks so much.
Of course. Bye.
Bye.
That's it. Thank you very much, Katie and Ira. Okay. Last, but by no means least, is Penny Stevenson. Penny is Vice President of DGHA and also on the board of Description Victoria. She's the founder of Footpaths to Freedom, an independent company providing O&M services for people who are blind or have low vision, mostly focusing on O&M. Penny specialises in using technology for an O&M as well as echolocation. Penny and her guide dog, Poppy, have been a team for 2 years. Welcome, Penny.
Cool. Thanks, everyone. Today I've got a short presentation about a feature I just discovered on Google Maps, and it's basically allowing you to, if you're using driving directions, unfortunately it doesn't seem to work using public transport or walking directions, just driving, but you can take public transport and be in driving mode. That works. But it allows you to share your journey with another person, and if the person that you're sharing with happens to be sighted, they can literally track your location in real time as you're travelling on the map and see exactly where you're located. And if someone's using VoiceOver, they can see that you're travelling but won't have as much level of detail, but know that you're still moving and know when you've reached your destination. So I'll start by playing this little clip. And it just sort of goes through the actual sound of VoiceOver, what
Maps
to do.
Button.
Okay, hi everyone. We're in Google Maps, and I've already I'm pretending that I'm catching a taxi from my start location into Hamer Hall tonight. And I just want to let people know when I get in the taxi. I want to let someone know so that they can share my journey with me. So I'm going to send that person a message with a link to track my location. So here we are in Google Maps. I'm just going to flick right with VoiceOver through the various options. I'm not going to explain them because they're all fairly self-explanatory, but I will just pause and let you know about a few things.
1,365 Malvin Road.
So that's my origin.
More options, button.
Don't need to worry about that. Hamer Hall, that's my end destination.
Swap start and destination, button, selected. Driving, 16 minutes, button.
Okay, so I have selected driving, but I could also see public transport or walking or ride sharing or cycling. So I'm just going to flick through all of those fairly quickly.
Public walking, ride, cycling, traffic and more, button.
So now we're on the actual map itself. Traffic and more is going to show some visual options if you can see them. Like it shows you where public transport is or how much traffic is on the road. Generally, I just kind of skip through this section.
Move to my location button.
Move to my location button. That really hones in on exactly where you are. But again, it's sort of the visual area of the map, so I don't usually worry.
16 minutes, 9.8 kilometres. This route has toll. Fastest route now. Avoids congestion. Expand to see more information.
Okay, I'm going to just flick right till that we get to the start.
Steps button.
So steps, that's the actual directions. We can read through them.
Start button.
Okay, start button. So I'm going to do that.
Start.
Head west on Malvern Road towards.
Head west on Malvern Road towards Shaftesbury Ave. Adjustable. Swipe up or down with one finger to adjust the value.
Okay, so I'm just going to flick through here to flick right.
Search along route, audio state, unmuted, adjust map bearing, 116 degrees, button, dub 19 minutes, 9.8 kilometres, 1:42 p.m, expand to see more information.
So that's giving me how long it's going to take me and what time I'm going to arrive, and I'm going to double tap on that.
Share trip progress, button.
Okay, so when I double tap, it says share trip progress, so that's exactly what I want to do. I'm going to double tap on that.
Selected. Share location until you arrive.
Okay, so share location as you arrive, and now it's got a little drop-down of people, and I suspect they're people who use Google. So, you know, if you've got a friend who's a Google user, you can they will come up in your sort of quick list, and if not, you just keep flicking past them, and you'll get to the general sharing options like message, mail, whatever. So,
William Hamilton, Kate, Jennifer Pemp Moore, message, button.
Okay, so you heard more.
Wait for the sound. Then drag to rearrange.
And then after the more button was message. So I'm going to actually, send a text message, but you could also send an email message. I'm going to send a text message.
Message, alert. Text field is editing. Insertion point at start.
Okay.
Alerted to access misspelled words.
I'm going to send it to myself.
Four, 0, 0, 4, use 4, 3, 2, 2, 4, 7. 7, 3, 2, 2, 2, 3, 3, 7, 8, 8, 7, 7, 3, 2, 2.
It's all right if you know my telephone number. It's my business number. It's cool. I thought, good, actually, a little publicity.
So it sends a link.
Send button.
Send
button. Send message progress. Head west on Malvern Road towards Shaftesbury A.
Okay, so it's sent a link to myself. But I cannot get it at the moment because I've got Do Not Disturb turned on. So I'm going to leave this recording for the moment and come back.
Screen recording in pro.
So the thing that I actually found out was that I can't actually send it to myself because I then have to get out of the route, and then if I try and go into the route, it'll say that I'm no longer travelling that journey. So it does only work if you send it to somebody else, and that you're still actually inside that journey. If you've actually stopped travelling, when the person gets the link, if they open it after you've finished, it'll say this link has expired and you're no longer travelling, you're at your destination. I just thought that's a really neat thing to know. The other thing that I was told the other day, and I'm really sorry, I'm having a mental blank about who told me it, is that Google Maps also has a feature where you can look up your trip histories. So you can actually see where you've been and which routes you've taken. So if you did plan a journey, and you planned it and you know you wanted to go along the Eastern Freeway or something like that, and your taxi driver took you in a different direction, you can actually see the route that you actually ended up taking rather than the one you planned. So that's kind of a neat feature too. As long as you're signed into Google, you've got a Google account, you can sort of look through your history. One of the other things that I just wanted to touch on is often I get asked about when's a good time to start integrating technology into your mobility. And the thing that I always say is that you need to be really, really solid on the mobility aid that you're using. You need to be at the level of being automatic, that, you know, the information that you're getting from your mobility aid, you no longer have to think about what it means. You're just reacting to it instinctively. So, you know, if you've got a new dog, you know, that's probably, you probably might need to give yourself just a little bit of time to get used to your bond before you start on a new piece of technology. If it's something that you're already using and you're familiar with, that's going to be easier to bring into a new relationship. But you've got to be either solid with your technology or solid with your dog. You can't be new with your technology and new with your dog. It's, you know, it's just a recipe made for disaster. The same with using a cane. If you're just brand new to using a cane, that's not the best time to be starting to integrate a brand new piece of technology. So, yeah, you need to be at the automatic level of skill acquisition. How to instigate a new, you know, piece of technology, how to investigate it, how to work it out. The thing that I always say to people is use it in an area that you're really familiar with, so that you can get used to the language that piece of technology uses to describe things that you already know that are there. So, you know, if it's going to say the street names in a really weird way, you can kind of go, oh, when it says, you know, Kuyayong, it means Kuyong, for example. And, you know, you've already got some sort of little tags that you can be hanging the information on. If it's an app, I usually just start in my own home just by exploring the screen. Start in the top left-hand corner and just flick right. Just hear the buttons and the options. and just explore it from the comfort of your own home, where you can press the home button and get out of it. If you make a mistake, you can restart your phone without the pressure of actually being in the real world. Take it with you when you're going places. If you're being driven, particularly if you're with friends, someone that you trust, you know, have it on when you just don't have to concentrate. You don't have to be stressed. You can just hear the information that's providing, just as you're going along. So to take that pressure off, they're sort of my top tips for learning a new app. And just some other options in addition to the Google Maps sort of share your trip progress. There are a couple of other apps that you can use. There's Find My Friends, where you can choose to share your location with other people. And also there's an app called Companion. And it's a little bit clunky to use. You have to send out sort of friend requests and get them to join up your circle. And I sort of got a bit lost through the process, but it seemed to work okay. So I can't say that I've used it particularly, but it is a way of being able to sort of set up a network of people that can sort of know where you are when you're going to unfamiliar places. So I suppose I think I'll just leave it there.
Great. Thanks, Penny. Heaps of really good info, all three presentations. So now we've got a little bit of time, around 15 minutes or so, for any questions from the audience or input from the audience. Please, there'll be running mics. Please say your name and also the person you're directing your question to or persons. Okay, so we've got the running mics going. Yeah.
I'll make it easy for you by giving you a bit of extra time. I just wanted to make a quick comment, if I could, Kevin.
Yes.
Yep. Just to say that we had a text message. Not sure. I have a feeling it's from Katrina Stewart, but I'm not sure. But it thanks Katie for her demonstration of Aira, and says that it's unrivaled, and she uses it all the time. And the reason I wanted to share that is because there may be a perception that BCA is actually being paid to sell Aira at this convention, and in fact certain people have actually alluded to that. I just want to say that is absolutely not the case, and I'd remind you that in fact yesterday I was one of the people who asked Suman some difficult questions about privacy and so forth, along with others. And we've also got Bindi Maps here as well. But what I do want to say is that the fact that Katie took the time to record such a detailed demonstration, and the fact that so many people are trying out the glasses and doing all sorts of things this weekend, is really, I think, testament to the fact that it's a really innovative and unparalleled piece of technology. I just wanted to make it clear that, no, BCA is not getting any commission, and we will, without any guilt, promote any technology that we think is going to improve the lives of people who are blind or vision impaired, as we did with the Eureka many years ago and have done with other important innovations in technology. So I just wanted to make that clear. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Emma. Okay, over to the audience. We got anybody?
Yep. Yes, hello. Hi, my name's Paola. I think those apps are amazing. They sound amazing. Blind Square sounds really good. I'm losing my vision, and I'm just wondering how I, as a deaf person, can access those apps. Being blind and deaf makes it very different. I'd be interesting to know a lot more if there are other apps or anything else that could be used.
Great. Okay. Any comments from the panellists?
I'm happy to give that a shot. Are you yet a Braille reader?
No, I'm not a Braille reader yet.
Okay, because there is the ability to connect up your mobile phone to a Braille display, and then that gives you direct access to any of the apps and the information that they provide. So anything that VoiceOver speaks is represented on a Braille display. In terms of the Aira service, for example, you can actually text message an agent and they can text you back. So if you still have functional vision to be able to read the screen, you can actually communicate with them without talking. So that's a great feature, that is possible. And then, of course, you know, if you do have the ability, if you have hearing and you can, you know, route the audio from your voiceover or your phone directly into your hearing aids, that's another possibility as well.
Greg Metz from WA, and a question for John Ross. Now, yep. I'm assuming, John, that you've got some funding at the moment to run what you're doing with Blind Square. I use Blind Square myself, out in the wild, so to speak. It gathers this information from Foursquare. With the beacons, and you were mentioning that the information that's provided by those beacons is put up onto a Google Sheet. And I'm just wondering, you're probably doing a lot of work putting that information up at the moment. When the funding runs out, who will be maintaining those sheets? And is there a possibility that information that you've got several years down the track could be actually incorrect because it hasn't been updated?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. We have a lot of our early sites we receive funding for, so Melbourne Zoo, District Docklands, the schools program and that sort of thing. Those sites have already committed to running it long term. So when the funding runs out, they're happy to pay the yearly cost of maintaining that. Peter, our Public Transport Victoria program is actually a paid one by PTV. So they're actually paying us for our time and for the equipment that's going in there. So that's a fully self-funding program for that one as well. Regarding the time, and you're saying how messages get outdated, we are looking at, in a lot of our quotes, we incorporate a lived experience consultant cost as well to these sites to have people with low vision and vision impairment go through, either being maybe once a year or twice a year, to go out and audit all these sites and make sure that messaging is still current and up to date and working correctly. So it's not a matter of turning everything on and forgetting about it from there on, especially like places like District Docklands, shops there are changing all the time. So I went out the other day and just did a brief update of all the new shops and all that sort of thing. So the message can be changed quite quickly and in real time. And places like that, we also provide the opportunity for them to take on the control of the spreadsheet as well. Mm-hmm. So District Docklands, again, once we put everything in and install it and test it, they have the opportunity to take control of that sheet themselves and manage it, or they can pay guide dogs or Tori to do it for them. So we see that as an income stream as well on our end too.
Hi, it's Ramona Mandy. I have a comment and then a question for John Ross.
Yep.
JR, firstly, the comment is that over the years when I worked in the area of navigational devices for vision impaired people, I worked with you a lot around different devices. And as a sighted OMI person, you learnt to use those pieces of equipment as a blind person. So interaction with devices like that as a blind person is a little bit different. You have to wait and listen to the messages.
Yep.
You coped very well with devices that didn't have screens and everything like that. And I think it's a skill that isn't always easy for sighted people to adopt, but you did very well. And I just encourage you to encourage your other OMI sighted instructors to do the same thing, because not everyone will be able to pick up devices and teach themselves. There will be some people that will need that support from OMIs. So that was my comment.
Thank you, Ramona.
Secondly, question. I was involved with the early testing of the beacons at Southern Cross Station, and I know at that time there was some concern about interference with the compass working well because of all the electrical the trains and the electromagnetic sort of fields. Mm-hmm. Has that been addressed, and is there a concern around the railways, future railway stations with the beacons?
Yeah, so just to go over Ramona's point, when I was putting the beacons in at Southern Cross, because of all the electrical signals, it was only the platform ones that were affected. So we wanted a beacon at the top of every platform. So as you were up the top of platform 9 and 10, you were getting that message. Because we had all the electrical signals running underneath, I was literally standing on the top there with three different compasses, and all three were giving me different readings. So I had the old school magnetic compass, your phone compass, I had an external GPS, and they're all giving me different things. So that's why we're getting that interference, and we weren't getting that correct compass bearing as we would. So we have looked at that, Ramona, and what we've done there, just in the really early versions, is really simplify that message. So rather than getting directional message, you're only getting a push notification that you're at platform 9 and 10. So you're not being able to get as much detail as what we would have liked. There are talks with Blind Square about linking the beacons as well. So one beacon will know that you've exited that field and the next one will pick it up. So then you've got actually a direction of travel, which will give you a more accurate description. So we are looking at that down the track as well. Regarding the other stations and the other sites, we haven't had any interference so far. All the other public, the PTV stations in the City Loop, we're keeping the technology off the platforms. That was a request from Metro and PTV. So we're guiding people through the concourses down to the platforms, but not on the platforms themselves. So we're not getting that interference as well from all the electrical signals that run through it. So we find that if people know where the entrance to the platform is, we'd love to have it on the platforms themselves. But PTV were worried, oh, what happens if someone's listening to your message and they fall off the edge of a platform? And I said to them, you know, 90% of the travellers these days have got headphones in their ears, listening to music and everything anyway. So, but we thought we're not going to really push the point this early in the piece. We'd love, you know, some technology is better than no technology at all. Mm. So we'll get in there and then we'll look at that later on.
Thanks, JR. Others?
Hi, everyone. This is Sel from WA. Is this working?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay. So those are all really, really great apps. Thanks for giving us a demo of them. Just also want to suggest or recommend another app for you, Penny, is the Move It app. Have you heard of that?
Yes, I use Move It and Transit. Yes, and Katie alluded to Move It as well. Fantastic. They're both fantastic public transport apps.
Find it actually really good, just mainly on buses.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the best at giving directions when you're walking, but buses are really good for that.
Thanks, sir. That's great.
Technology is excellent, and as I said, it's very good, but it's electronic. And it can fail on you. And I see, all right, I'm an old blind person. I'm totally blind. I think that, sorry, it's Les Buchanan, sorry, from Perth. But I think I see newer blind people relying more and more on technology and not learning using their mobility skills or whatever they're taught. Now, Katie, you totally ignored your guide dog.
Guide dog.
Well, no, because you weren't listening to him. You weren't listening to things for the guide dog. I'm sorry. It's not a criticism. Just how I felt that you were using the technology. No, I think you've got to be careful of your spatial awareness. Spatial awareness, and I think it's an add-on. We've got to be careful that we don't use it as a your totally thing. I find that's what I'm just wanted to say.
Thanks, Les, but I think the panellists did really reinforce, especially Penny, in the last, that you need to be confident and skilled with your basic mobility before you take on the other additional apps. But we take your point, but I'm sure everyone agrees. Thank you. Okay, look, we better wind it up.
Oh, I had one more question.
One lot of questions. Oh, okay.
Sorry, I'll be quick.
That's fine.
It's Jen Nichols here, and I'm actually glad the questions are in this order now because I was just about to talk to Katie briefly. I noticed you use an iPhone and Seeing Eye Dog. I've got put off now. I actually really related to that video, and you talk to your dog the same way that I talk to mine. But I know how hard your brain was working during that because, okay, you've got a lady talking to you, you're feeling the dog. Did you have the phone in your right hand or just, like, that's one question, is the phone in your right hand? The other question is, what do you do if you are using your phone with Ira and you have another dog as came past you and yours just walked straight on by? What happens then if you suddenly need to grab the dog or the seagull comes down or you go in the rubbish bin and you're like, oh, yeah. My... And I totally have to agree that you would be using your dog 110%.
Yeah.
And there is no way you could have done that walk by ignoring your dog. You can't do it.
Yep.
I would have gotten run over by that bus.
Right. Thanks, Jen. Katie?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I completely agree that you do need to be very
proficient in using your chosen mobility aid. There is a fair degree of concentration. Yes, I did have my phone in my right hand. You know, if it calls for it when you're using Aira, I will just say to them, hang on a sec, I need to use my right hand, and, you know, I'll just maybe tuck my phone in my pocket or hold it with the lead in my hand. I don't care what they're seeing at the same time with the camera. And it's funny you mention it, actually, because we did a couple of demos before we got to this one because a couple didn't work. And there was one where I dropped my phone in a gutter and had to go and feel around for it.
All right, Katie, thank you very much. I'm sorry, we are running very close to time now, so we'll have to wind the questions up. JR just has something very quick to say, and then we'll close the session.
I didn't mention through my talk before, when I was talking about setting up Blind Square event for free use of Blind Square, the good guys at Blind Square have actually set up an event that covers all of Tasmania for the next few days.
Oh, wow.
So if anyone is not a Blind Square user and wants to download Blind Square event from the App Store and see what it's like, you can use that to cover the whole state for the next few days.
Fantastic.
Great, thanks, JR. Okay, I'll just give you a little, little bit of info about DGHA. It's a national association of peer dog guide users, friends and supporters, aiming to enhance the independence inclusion for dog guide users. We have 123 financial members, mostly who are dog guide users. And you can, the best place to go for information is to the .dgha website, www.dgha.org.au. We have 456 Facebook members, and again, search for DGHA on Facebook. And we share Geordie Howell's email list, so for those who would prefer an email rather than Facebook. And go to the website for that address. And I'll just run through the committee for you. So myself as president, Penny Stevenson as vice president, Francois Jacobs as treasurer, Joyce Jones as secretary, Annette Ferguson, Katie Butler, Ros Matthews, John Hardy, Jennifer Dole, Kathy Egan, Bevan Warwick Best, and Jamie Kelly.
Kevin, I'm not
and
on
Katie,
your board.
I've just elevated you to the DGHA committee. Sorry. And I also, that's right. I also like to thank Greg Madsen and Erica Webb, who provide a lot of background support in terms of the website and the social media.